Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What to Read Next podcast helps you build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lauren Amin interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then the show's for you. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I write novels, and I've been at this for quite a while now. I published my first novel in 1999, and my 32nd novel is coming out in July. And I got started by writing a series of books called the Elm Creek Quilts novels, because when you're an aspiring writer and you're just getting started, the advice that I got, and I imagine a lot of writers get, is write what you know. Mm-hmm. And I was, and I am still a quilter, and I know all about quilters' inside jokes. And, you know, I was fascinated with the history and tradition and artistry of quilting. So I wrote a book about the secret lives of quilters. And then I wrote another one and another one. And before I knew it, I was writing a series. And even when I was writing those mostly contemporary books, I always loved to indulge my love of history, especially women's roles in history and marginalized people's roles in history. You know, all of the people who contributed to society and culture, but maybe only made it into the footnotes or the margins, if they made it into the narrative at all. And those were the stories that I was fascinated by. And so I kind of moved away from the series and into just historical fiction, although I do still, you know, bring out an Elm Creek Quilts novel every now and then. But I really love to write stories that explore the lives of particularly women whose contributions have gone unheralded, or maybe someone else claimed credit for them. Mm-hmm. And you just someone that I discover, a real figure or a group of women, and that really had such a fascinating role that I really think people ought to know more about, and, you know, someone too that I would like to learn more about. So although the advice I got in the beginning was write what you know, in, you know, 32 novels later, it has now become for me, write what I want to learn about. Because for me, if something piques my curiosity, or if I discover a fascinating historical person, then I want to learn all I can. And then for me, it's a lot of fun to be able to share what I learn with other people in the form of a fictional story.
I love this. Oh, so what is your research process? Like, how do you get the idea for historical fiction? Did you read something that just sparks the interest, or something that you have heard somewhere else, or you go down the rabbit hole and you're like, oh, this is fascinating, there might be something to explore here? I'm curious to hear.
A little bit of all of that. Usually what happens is while I am researching and writing one book, in the course of researching that story, I will discover or sometimes stumble over some other historical event or a group of women or one particular historical figure. And I will think, oh, wow, this person is so amazing. She really deserves her own book. And then I won't trust this to memory. I keep a list. So I add it to my list and I say, okay, maybe this has potential for a future book. And then I just kind of file it away on my list. And I also keep it in my, you know, probably percolating in the back of my mind. And then eventually when I finish the book I'm working on, I usually circle back to that list and then, you know, think about on further reflection, what captures my imagination most? What story am I most excited about telling? And then I will dive into that person's or that group of women or that historical event, you know, with as much enthusiasm as I did the previous story.
I love this. And so chat about Switchboard Soldiers. Tell us the other one page.
I'm sorry?
Tell us the elevator pitch of this book.
The elevator pitch. Well, this is actually a story that was, I did learn about them while I was researching a previous novel, but that's not the elevator pitch because those have to be brief. So here's the elevator pitch. Switchboard Soldiers is the story of the courageous young women who served as telephone operators in France with the United States Army Signal Corps during World War I. Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, telephones were the most important means of communication between U.S. Army headquarters and Allied outposts and troops in the field. I know we have this idea of radios, but that didn't come along until later. So it was still telephones that were essential for communications. So telephone operators were absolutely essential to the war effort. And their perseverance and courage and skill and dedication not only helped the Allies achieve victory, but also convinced a skeptical American president and Congress and public that American women too deserve to write the right to vote. Mm-hmm. So these wonderful, valiant women of the U.S. Army Signal Corps broke down barriers and they cleared the way for generations of women who followed after them, not only in the military, but in all aspects of public and professional life.
Mm. Oh my gosh. I think this is such
and you probably hadn't heard of about and you hadn't heard about them, had you?
Yeah, I haven't heard about
exactly.
And it's such a relevant topic to think about it, you know, today in 2022. Like it's right. A relevant topic.
Right. And to think they were so crucial to victory. And most of us have had no idea. Mm-hmm. And so now I should tell you, since I teased it, I should tell you how I got the idea for this story.
Yeah, tell me.
So it was while I was writing my previous novel, while I was researching it, it was called The Women's March. Mm-hmm. And it was about the 1913 women's suffrage procession that was held that Alice Paul and Ida B. Wells Barnett and so many other women involved in the suffrage movement. They held it on the day before Woodrow Wilson's inauguration, and it was supposed to be this wonderful, massive parade, and it was to put him on notice that he was going to have to pay attention to women's suffrage during his administration. So it was this big, amazing parade, and it was this protest and demonstration for women's rights and women's suffrage. And while I was researching that book, I learned just what a misogynist Woodrow Wilson was. And he was also a racist, and he was pretty, you know, you were able to keep those things hidden a little better during campaigns back then than in our media age, but he was pretty bad. And he was very against women's suffrage. But in the course of researching this book, I came across almost an aside where a historian noted that Woodrow Wilson was so impressed with the way that women conducted themselves, American women conducted themselves during the war to end all wars, as we thought and hoped it would be at the time, that he realized that they really did deserve the right to vote. They had proven themselves ready to take on the responsibilities of citizenship, and they deserved the right to vote too. And I'm just like, just froze. I was like, wait a minute. This guy, this notorious misogynist, suddenly decided that women deserve the right to vote. Well, what was it that women did to so completely change his mind? And then I filed that away. I thought, I've got to learn more about this. So when that book was complete, I started doing more research. And I knew that women had been involved as nurses because their stories has been shared and been known, but I really wanted to see, well, what else was it? And then I learned more about how women took on so many roles on the World War I home front. And I know we know very much about Rosie the Riveter. We have that iconic image in our minds from World War II, but even with the First World War, women were taking roles that had been traditionally the province of men. They were streetcar operators, mail carriers, letter carriers, post office workers. They worked in factories. And I was surprised. And, you know, in hindsight, it was, well, of course they did. But what really impressed me was the story of women who actually served over there. Mm-hmm. And that's when I learned about the switchboard operators who went and served bravely and at great risk to their own lives in World War II, or I'm sorry, in World War I. Because, yes. You know, when General Pershing went over there, when the United States joined the war in 1917, he went over to France and he found a communication system that was just not up to what he knew he would need in order to lead his troops and, you know, and carry out his mission. And the technology was in France was just not very good. There were a lot of rather antique instruments. Mm-hmm. And at this point, American technology, American telephone technology was just the best in the world. And American telephone operators were also the best in the world. So they brought over the technology and they were setting things up, and they put male soldiers at the switchboards. They would take male telegraph operators or other soldiers who had enlisted, and they would try to train them, but they just weren't very good at it. You know, they just didn't have the training. They couldn't do it as fast and as quickly and as accurately as General Pershing was used to from the wonderful service back home. And this was really considered women's work. Telephone mm-hmm. operating was considered women's work. So virtually all telephone operators in the U.S. were women. So when General Pershing told U.S. Army headquarters, I have to have the best telephone operators we can get over here if we're going to win this war, well, they really had no choice but to recruit women. Now, at this point, women were not allowed in the U.S. Army. The Navy allowed women to enlist, and they were put into various clerical jobs and so forth to free up men to go to sea. Mm-hmm. But the Army was not enlisting women. They didn't have any role for that. And in fact, in most states, women couldn't even vote yet. There were some states that had passed measures allowing women to vote, but not only could they not enlist the Army, they couldn't, most of them couldn't even vote. So despite all of that, when General Pershing said, I need the best telephone operators that we can get, and therefore that means women, the U.S. Army started recruiting women.
Mm. That's fascinating. Oh my gosh.
And these women had to have very special skills. They yeah. had to be, you know, because this was going to be these were highly sensitive positions. Mm-hmm. So they had to be absolutely the best of the best mm-hmm. at their job, because these calls had to be connected, and if they weren't and messages didn't get through, battles would be lost and lives would be lost. Mm-hmm. And they also had to be absolutely fluent in French, mm-hmm. because they would be communicating with French officers and French headquarters and all of that, and sometimes the operators would have to translate mm-hmm. on during that call between an American or a British officer who could not speak French and a French speaker, their French counterparts who were not fluent in English. They had to be able to translate perfectly, flawlessly, while the call was going on. And then, of course, they had to have absolutely, you know, impeccable qualities of discretion and loyalty, because they'd be dealing with very, very sensitive information. So when the call went out for women to, you know, serve their country in this way, something like 7,600 applied, but mm-hmm. only a very small fraction of that even made it onto the next level of training and final qualifications and final selection for going abroad.
Wow. That's so fascinating. I love the story. Oh my God.
This is like fascinating. You can see why I was so eager yeah. to write this book, because it's just such a, these women made such incredible contributions, and yet they're largely not remembered for what they contributed yeah. today.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you for writing this book. And thank you for reliving this history that we should know about, you know.
No, I'm very happy to do it.
Awesome. So let's chat some book recommendations. Do you have any books you recommend our listeners to pick up?
Oh, you know, I love to read, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like to read a lot of different genres. When I'm writing a book, I tend to read a lot of history and biography, especially if I'm writing historical fiction. But I really love to read historical fiction for pleasure. But that said, I never will just limit myself to a single genre, because there are just too many wonderful books out there in all different genres for me to ever just have to settle on just one. I would never want to do that. But one of my very favorite historical novels that I've read in recent years is The Women of the Copper Country by Mary Doria Russell. She's my absolute favorite author. And when I did have the opportunity to meet her a few years ago at a book festival in Ohio, I probably horribly embarrassed myself by fangirling all over the place. But she was very gracious and lovely about my fangirling. She's just a masterful storyteller. And this particular novel is about the Calumet, Michigan copper mining strike of 1913. So at the same time, you know, my characters were marching in Washington, her characters were having a mining strike in northern Michigan. It's absolutely riveting. And the story was the strike was led by a 25-year-old, 6'5" wife of a miner. Her name was, she was called Big Annie Clements. Mm-hmm. And with her in the lead, the miners demanded better wages and safer working conditions after just terrible injuries and gruesome deaths. They just became commonplace. Mm-hmm. So what I love about this book is Mary Doria Russell's just eloquent prose and her flawless use of period detail. And of course, her characters are just so absolutely true to life, just absolutely fully developed and more than three-dimensional. And, you know, I would say this book is a must read, but really, if you like historical fiction, just do yourself a favor, read every one of Mary Doria Russell's books. You will not be sorry. You'll be glad you did. And you will thank me later. Just do this. So she's just absolutely, absolutely fantastic and brilliant.
Oh, I love this. Thank you.
And she has so many wonderful books that, Just get them all. Read them all. There, you won't be sorry. Trust me. And then some other books I've read recently. I recently finished Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel. And she is another one of my very, very favorite authors. I love Station 11. And you know what? I really feel like it prepared me for our pandemic because, you know, and I wrote about the pandemic, the 1918 flu pandemic in my fifth novel. I actually wrote about that, you know, in the early 2000s. So, you know, so I thought, oh, okay, here it comes. So I was able to kind of psychologically brace myself a little bit. But Sea of Tranquility, it also deals with pandemic issues, but it's so amazing because it combines historical fiction and speculative fiction and time travel, maybe. I don't want to have any spoilers, but just like Mary Doria Russell, all of her books are absolutely brilliant and just so eloquently written. Just read them all. They're all great. But most recently, I've read Sea of Tranquility. And then for something completely different, I'm going to recommend another book that I read recently because it's not the usual kind of book I read, but I couldn't put it down. And that is The Violin Conspiracy by Brendan Slocum. And this is kind of a mystery, a bit of a thriller and a bit of a whodunit, which is not usually what I pick up. But I was drawn to this story because it is about a stolen Stradivarius. And I love classical music and, and that, just the idea of that. And then the main character who has the Stradivarius stolen is an African-American man who is this absolutely brilliant violinist. And so in addition to the mystery, which is very compelling about how this Stradivarius that was, you know, absolutely priceless, how it got stolen and all of these different suspects with and their fraught relationships. But it also talks about the classical musical or the classical music world and the place that African-American artists have within it and the institutional racism they face, the struggles that they, you know, the struggles that they face just to be able to walk through the door. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, in addition to that very compelling social story, then you also have a violin competition, a performance competition. So you have all of these elements going on at the same time, and they're all so fascinating and compelling, and they all come together so seamlessly. And the author is himself an African-American violinist, so he knows the world he's writing about. And I always love that. I love hearing about a world that the author knows intimately and can give you this insider perspective. Mm-hmm. So that's another book that, you know, it's different from the other two I mentioned because I gave you a nice little variety, historical mm-hmm. and then speculative fiction and then a very compelling mystery. So I think that should give all of your listeners at least one to pick up, but I really very highly recommend all three.
I love this. Oh, tell us where you can find you online.
You can find me online. My website is jennifercchiaverini.com. I'm also on Facebook at Jennifer Chiaverini Author. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram, sort of. I have accounts and I post occasionally, but really you're more likely to see me on my Facebook page or on my website.
I love this. Thank you, Jennifer, for being on the show.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For a list of books mentioned and other romance recommendations, please visit whatyourneextblog.com. Did you know you can purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore? With LibroFM, you can pick up more than 250,000 audiobooks, including bestsellers and recommendations from real booksellers. You'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company, you know the name, but you'll be part of a different story, one that supports the local community. If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to squeeze more reading into your busy life. Listen with the free LibroFM app while you do your chores, walk the dog, relax at home. If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen next, check out recommendations from people who know the best booksellers. The Watch Your Next podcast has a special offer for our listeners. Get two audiobooks on LibroFM for the price of one with your first month membership. Use code WATCHYOURNEXT. The offer is valid only for new members in Canada and the U.S. The Watch Your Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Please visit frolic.media/podcast to discover new shows to tune in. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourneextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship package for you. Thank you once for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.